to really articulate the struggles of the youth during that time and put it on some banging beats and be really accountable to the people's stories. So Native Guns, Kiwi, Bamboo, you have Blue Scholars in Seattle, a great, great independent band with one of their artists being Filipino, their bass and keyboard player, Monument to the Masses, and excellent. And the committee we have in Long Beach and the Westwood area, folks that are coming out, artists, students, that are really trying to draw the lines to what's going on in our community, how it relates, because that's how we can utilize the culture as cultural activists, as cultural artists, to really raise, arouse, organize, and mobilize the people's consciousness. I mean, many people sometimes won't read. So if we're able to articulate it with a video or with a song or with some music, then that is a catalyst for them to start getting more information and starting to do more research and ask more questions about what's going on, what's our history, and what's our future.
Okay, I want to read. That's really amazing, and I'm really looking forward to hearing some of these Filipino hip-hop acts. Maybe you can point me in the right direction later.
You could definitely go to, I believe, nativeguns.com. Or you can actually look at one of the community youth organizations' websites, propeopleyouth.com, and there's some links particularly for the Native Guns website, Kiwi, Bamboo. I believe there's also a Blue Scholars website linked there. But those are just a few, and it's continuing to grow. But those are a few website links that you could check out, propeopleyouth.com or nativeguns.com, groundworkmusic.com, and I believe bluescholars.com.
Okay, we're going to listen to a little bit of a little bit more traditional Filipino music now. Johnny Radio. You're listening to killradio.org. The name of today's show is Manila Mashup. We're speaking with Jason and John Eric of the People's Core, People's Community Organization for Reform and Empowerment, talking about Filipino youth, hip-hop, and Filipino politics. I'm going to read a little piece now, titled Inequality in the Ranks, and it's regarding two bills. I'm not sure of the date on this article, actually, but the bills are S-1156 and H-R-2297. These bills deny, according to this article, written by Feliciano Bunagan, he's the president of the California Filipino World War II Veterans Association. These bills deny 120,000 American veterans MLK's dream. And the article goes like this. I would like to tell the public, most especially the people of America and others who are here, inasmuch as they respect Martin Luther King, they should grant respect and recognize the Filipino World War II veteran. 120,000 of us sacrificed our lives. Some of us even died to save democracy. Now we are denied. How can America honor Martin Luther King Jr. and discriminate against us at the same time? I am one of the remnants alive to tell you the sentiments of 8,000 Filipino World War II veterans living in the United States in crowded rooms. It is a pity that most Filipino veterans are receiving welfare when they should be enjoying the full benefits and compensation of an American veteran. The two bills that Congress just passed to address our injustice, S. 1156 and H.R. 2297, continue the discrimination against us. Even those very few who are allowed to receive full compensation because of these new laws cannot go home. If we stay with our families in the Philippines for longer than 2 months, our benefits are cut in half. We are offered justice only if we give up living in our homeland. If I could only explain, my sentiments are the same as other veterans. We are lamented, discontented, discriminated. We were denied social justice, which makes us feel pain in our hearts. We were inducted into the United States Armed Forces of the Far East, which meant we were U.S. Army. Franklin Delano Roosevelt declared that we were to serve under the American flag. This was not the Filipinos' war, it was an American war. When we were fighting against the Japanese en bataille, General Homa tried to convince the Filipino soldiers to withdraw from the side of the Americans. He told us over the bullhorn that we were only involved in this war because we were a colony of the United States. He said we should not let the Americans use us to defend them. But we remained loyal and fought side by side with the Americans against the Japanese because that was our duty. You can read the remainder of this article at www.katipunan-usa.org. That's katipunan-usa.org. I had a question for you, Jason, but I can't remember what it was. Does that article raise any issues that we haven't already discussed for you guys?
Well, it continues to cover, at least from the veteran sentiment, what they're dealing with, their plight. Definitely a good film that folks on the internet can take a look at is the Broken Promises film that's shown on the Pro People Youth website. But also, if you go to, I believe now they have a MySpace account, Justice for Filipino American Veterans, where they actually show the film Broken Promises and really gives an overview of what the veterans are dealing with and what the community has done to come to the aid of our grandparents. Now, the fact of the matter is that the veterans very much feel that they will never get benefits. Although they were 61 allies of the United States during World War II, 60 allies, 59 received benefits, and one was line itemed and focused on, pinpointed on with the Rescission Act of 1946, deeming their struggle and their fight and their services as inactive. Those two letters, IN, inactive, basically removed any sacrifices that they've given in the name of life, liberty, and the pursuit of justice from the record books. So it's definitely an insult to the community. And at the same time, the veterans themselves are now drawing issues and drawing lines and saying, you know what, to the young Filipinos who continue to join the military, because that's something distinguishable in our community. That's how we've came to America, many of our family. My father was in the Navy. We look at it in high regard, but our veterans, our grandfathers are even saying, you know what, they used us. And we had American teachers. We love the United States. We know the Star Spangled Banner. We know the United States history by heart. Yet, they denied us justice. They can easily do that to you, you young Filipino Americans who are now participating in the military, the armed forces, while we have this war of terror by the Bush administration. Now, imagine you as a young Filipino who have never been to the Philippines. You were born here in the United States, like, for example, me and Jason. We've been there, but for example, a Filipino that's never been there, who joined the military, is sent to the Philippines as part of the second front of the war on terror. It looks familiar. It sounds familiar. It looks like people you know. It looks like your relatives. The food tastes great because it's your food. The sound, the feeling, it's so familiar. It's welcomes you back. But what if the commanding officer tells you, son, and I put that in quotes, son, you gotta open fire on this village. You gotta strafe and bomb these people, your people. That's a question that the veterans themselves ask. What would you do? So the question is that the veterans even raise up is that if there's so much money allocated for the war, over $190 billion spent on the war so far, on top of that, money allocated for Hurricane Katrina, these veterans are pretty sure that they'll never get these benefits. That what they're doing is waiting for them, the United States government, although the president, several presidents have recognized, and the Congress have recognized this is wrong, they will not pass any bill to accommodate and do justice to these people, because what they're doing is they're waiting for them to die. 5 to 7 veterans die every day. So what they're doing is waiting. They're waiting. They've given them burial benefits due to a GI. So we recognize you in death. We recognize that you fought for the United States in death. But when you need some medicine to go to the hospital, you will not be catered to. So that's a struggle that our community deals with, and it's something that touches home. And what we're asking for the entire community, not only just the Filipino-American community, but the entire community in general, to come out November 11th for this 5th annual Veterans Day march and parade to honor and demand recognition, justice, and equity now for the World War II Filipino-American veterans.
Can you say that date and place again, please?
November 11th on Temple and Union Street. We will be caravanning from Temple down to Benton to Beverly, back up to Westlake, and end up on Burlington and Temple to really draw the community out, draw the college students who study Filipino history in their schools, but really to participate in it right now, this very moment, in historic Filipino town. So many times, there's a recent LA Times article that said, you know, it's not very prominent. Well, that's something that we're still working on. But one thing for sure that you can count on that is in historic Filipino town for the past 5 years is the Veterans Day Parade. And it's a way to unite our communities, whether they live in Cerritos, Carson, Long Beach, West Covina, Glendale, North Hollywood, to really come back to where we all started off from here in the United States, as far as Southern California is concerned, as far as Los Angeles is concerned. We saved up money and we moved out. We moved out to these suburban areas and these other places where Filipinos started to migrate. But somewhere down that line, their cousin, their aunt, their parents, their grandparents first immigrated to the Temple Boji corridor.
Okay. Excuse me. John Eric, I'm going to read just a little excerpt. This is an excerpt from America is in the Heart, a personal history by Carlos Bulacan. Copyright 1943 and 1946. So this was written over 50 years ago. I came to know afterward that in many ways it was a crime to be a Filipino in California. I came to know the public streets were not free to my people. We were stopped each time these vigilant patrolmen saw us driving a car. We were suspect each time we were seen with a white woman. And perhaps it was this narrowing of our life into an island, into a filthy segment of American society, that had driven Filipinos like Doro inward, hating everyone and despising all positive urgencies toward freedom. Okay, let's listen to a little bit more Filipino music. You're listening to killradio.org. This is Johnny Radio. The name of today's show is Manila Mashup.
Sarap mabuhay sa bayang payapa, may saling musika at diwa ng tula. Sa ating pagising may ngiti ang diwa. Sa
aking pagtulog may halikang tala.
Going to read a Filipino recipe. The band that we're listening to right now is a Filipino band by the name of Almoranes. Today we're going to learn how to make liver sauce for lechon. You need one small can of liver pate, a third cup of vinegar, 1 1/4 cups of water, one medium onion chopped, 8 cloves of garlic pounded, 2 tablespoons of lard, 1/3 cup of powdered... Oh, do you know how to say that word, Jason? Bizcocho. Okay. 3/4 of a teaspoon of black pepper, salt to taste. And by the way, if you want to get these directions, you can look them up on palhbooks.com. That's palhbooks.com. Mix the liver pate, vinegar, water, bizcocho or crackers, sugar, salt, and pepper, and blend. Sauté garlic in lard. When brown, set aside, leaving only 1 teaspoon garlic in lard. Add onions and fry until tender. Add liver mixture. Cook over low heat, stirring constantly. Serve topped with the rest of the browned garlic. And that was today's recipe. Okay, here's a story about rockastra. This is rockin' with a 50-piece orchestra. This is the website called pulpcommunity.com. Sure, you've seen bands like Sandwich, Sugar Free, and Imago live over 100 times and can probably predict every drum break, bass solo, cymbal crash, and the exact moment the singer and the guitarist would leap in unison. But have you heard your favorite band perform while being accompanied by a 50-piece orchestra? On August 19th, 2005, those three bands, along with Cambio, Twisted Halo, and Silent Sanctuary, I'm pretty sure these are all Filipino acts, will do just that in a one-of-a-kind concert entitled Rockestra. Each band will be performing several of their own songs with a full band setup. This ain't no wussy acoustic gig, brother. Oh, that's a quote. Aided by no other than the Manila Symphony Orchestra, the MSO. Pulp, that's the name of this magazine, Pulp dropped by at a recent MSO rehearsal at St. Scholastica's College in Manila. All members of the six performing bands were also present, and it was their first time to hear the orchestra perform their songs, including Sugarfree's Prom, Imago's Anino, Sandwich's Masi Lungan. Is that there? Whoops. And Cambio's DV. Says Raymond Madas again of Sandwich and Cambio. Oh, can you guys please read this for me, because it's in Filipino and it's Tagalog, right?
Tagalog, yes.
Jason, why don't you read it?
Nung nalaman ko na magkakaroon ng orchestra, akala ko masyadong ambisyoso hanggang naaring ko na yon. Diego Mapa, Cambio, agrees. Ngayon lang nagsiniking dali di ko alam kung paano ito mangyana.
All right, can you guys translate that?
All right. Basically, we're trying to read this here. So they were trying to figure out how would this be possible. Didn't think that it would really work out, but it seems like it's starting to come together.
All right, thank you very much. Okay, let's see. Let's hear a little bit more Filipino music. Why don't we do that? Everybody, hold on. Here we go. John Eric, you were mentioning a little bit about the difficulty of reading Tagalog for Filipinos who are born in the United States. Can you shed some light on that for our listeners?
Well, it comes back down to practice, right? For example, the only time growing up that I was able to practice Tagalog was with my grandmother. She would talk to me, and you know, I would speak Tagalog. But as I grew up with friends in our community, you weren't really able to practice it. So from that, we would lose it. And the fact that we didn't have time to actually read Filipino books in Tagalog or whatever dialect that we so choose, sometimes it's hard because the Tagalog itself or any Filipino dialect is very phonetical. It's pronounced how it's spelled, and there's a lot of double-ups as far as some of the words. But for us, reading English a lot, you know, the PH, the silent letters, or the double consonants and vowels. I mean, we're not used to that because most of the time we've been reading English. But with that, we've been able to practice it. I came back from the Philippines, and I was okay. I could run conversations. I still couldn't read it as well. But since being back, because I haven't been able to practice, you kind of lose it. So those are some of the issues that, particularly in our community, that we are really trying to address, trying to get Tagalog classes in the high schools or in the colleges. I mean, the fact of the matter is, how many French people do you know? How many Russian people do you know? How many German people do you know? I mean, Spanish, it makes sense. We could learn Spanish. We could use it here, particularly right in historic Filipino town in Echo Park. We speak Spagalog, you know, a blend of Spanish and Tagalog. And,
okay,
you know, ¿qué onda, pare? ¿Anong bilita, carnal? You know, we just throw these
what does it mean?
No, what's cracking, homie? What's
doing?
Going on?
What's up, man? What's up?
You know, just how are you doing?
Wait, and how do you say it?
¿Qué onda, pare?
So, ¿qué onda, pare?
There you go.
No, what comes after that?
Anong balita, carnal? So what's
aong barita, carnal?
Anong balita?
Arong balita.
So the first one was, what's going on, buddy? And what's the news, cousin? Yeah. So that's pretty much the translation with it. But, you know, being able to...
I don't think I'm going to learn that in my Spanish class.
No, that's definitely, that's an Echo Park thing. That's from Tagalog right there. That's from the streets. from the street classes. You know, that's how we were able to blend and understand each other's culture. So, I mean, even strangely enough, I'm almost equivalent with my Spanish as far as my Tagalog is concerned. But that's something that we want to pursue in our community. Those are definitely issues that we want to address. I mean, something that's practical, something that you can apply, mm-hmm. something that you can build with. I mean, how many French people, how many German people, how many Russian people you know?
You mean immigrants who were born here?
As far as public education, we're learning these traditional civilized languages. You know, that's quote and unquote. But, I mean, these languages are just as well applicable, have wonderful writing, have wonderful poems, have wonderful stories with it, have great music. Why can't we learn some of those? So those are some things that we as a community want to address, is to be able to teach our students how to learn. Not even our students, but anybody that would want to, but in a public education setting that you could get some school credit for, that you can graduate with as part of your language class. Let's learn some Tagalog or Filipino or whatever Filipino dialect, or learn Chinese or learn Spanish or in other places. I mean, there's a growing Armenian community. I mean, just to be able to understand the demographics of a community and try to teach accordingly mm-hmm. compared to what they think is correct or what they think is good language.
Mm-hmm. Did you guys, is there a, I'm wondering about the sort of interaction between the local Mexican community and the local Filipino community. Are they friendly? Are there tensions?
Especially here, we're really close with our neighborhoods. Yeah. Neighborhood-wise, the people that are in your street, the people in your family, I mean, and that's how our streets look like. There's Filipino, there's Latino, there's Hispanics all over. Yeah. And you grow up with them, and you talk to them, and there's really not much divide over here. Even with, you know, the homeboy, you know, like the gangs that were over here before, it was mixed crews. You know, it wasn't like exactly all Filipino, exactly all Latino, but then it was mixed crews. And you can see it in the streets that people are cool with each other because... that's how you grow up. That's your peoples. And the divide that is there, it's not because of the, you know, racial tensions or because of that, but then it's just because of economic status from one area like to another place which has more money or, you know, stuff like that. It's not really on the tip of the ethnicities.
Jason, were you... you've been living around here your whole mm-hmm. life. Mm-hmm. So you were here during the... there was a lot of gang violence around mm-hmm, here, mm-hmm. What were the lines? Were they arbitrary? Were they racial lines or ethnic lines? Was it just sort of random?
Well, as far as what became gangs, we got to look at a historical standpoint. You know, Echo Park was the first suburbs of Los Angeles, the first suburbs outside of downtown. And what had happened was, you know, compared to other cities, New York, San Francisco, Chicago, where they're vertical cities, people build up, they stack on top of each other. We continually built out. So Temple Beverly Corridor was a recent immigrant stopping point to this day. And you had a small, where what is Chinatown now was a small little Italy. Yes, large Jewish enclave. A lot of Caucasians that lived in the Silver Lake, Angelino Heights
area. What year?
1920s to 1940s, 1950s, 1960s. But what had happened
that's similar, actually, in a way, to the Lower East Side of New York City, which was heavily... Italian and Jewish, and then it became more Hispanic.
Right. So what had happened was, well, the Zoot Suit riots. People started getting lynched on the block. People started, you know,
who was getting lynched by who?
The like Carlos Bulosan would point out, That if you went out your block, if you went out of the community, then you would be arrested by the police. You would be lynched. You would be beaten. If you were seen with a white woman, you would be
You mean actual lynchings?
Lynchings, definitely. Like beat downs, kill you. You don't, you know.
So this was like police on Filipino violence or white on Filipino violence?
White on people of color violence, police violence, police brutality. That had happened during those times.
During those times.
What started to surface were that these people were recent immigrants or they've lived there in the community. They were on the same basketball team. They were on the same car club or whatever. And they said, you know, it's about time that we need to protect ourselves. So they, you know, the neighborhoods came together. And, you know, you live on the same block. You're from the same village as me in back home. We need to protect each other. So in turn, they started to defend themselves. And then you had this white flight. People started to move out, right? The horizontalness of the characteristics of Los Angeles started to expand.
Okay.
More freeways, people started to build and move out, build and move out. So then in turn, the gang started to now have struggles with, you know, taking care of a community, taking care of a territory, but you also have more recent immigrants coming in. So now it became a battle of first generation, second generation, immigrant born or U.S. born, and slowly the clashes started to happen between them.
Okay.
But Jason also was there during that time, particularly on his block.
Okay.
Especially during those times, you know, I was able to stay conscious of it with my grandmother's help and my mother's help, and I didn't get caught up in it too much. But you know, I was there and I saw it, and it's a reality that we all faced over there, and it was some tough times, especially with the police corruption that was going on within the Rampart Division, with the street gangs that were up there. But, I mean, it was really telling of the times that were going on with the economic tensions that were going on with the...
Jason, excuse me for interrupting.
Oh, go ahead, please.
But... We're starting to run short on time. I was interested in hearing. Were you in any gangs?
Myself, no. I stayed clear.
What was it like? I mean, how did people approach you, pressure you in some way?
Oh yeah, I had a lot of friends that would ask me. You know, you want to join? You want to join? You want to be part of it? And you know, these are my homies. And like a lot of times, I'd just be chilling with them. I'll see, oh, you got a burn on your hand. Oh, you're a gang member now. Damn. Okay. So what's up? And so like I got approached a couple times, and I was really into a lot of family things that were going on, especially with my grandmother and my mother keeping like tight reins on me. I couldn't go home with any kind of signs of gang activity because things would happen to me. But you know, in the block, a lot of things went on. You know, a lot of people had to survive. A lot of people needed a way to really sustain an economy for themselves and for their friends and for their families. And, you know, I was fortunate in that I didn't get exposed to that side of the culture firsthand. But I know that it's just a way of surviving the system over here, especially with the oppressive nature of our economy. It's hard for immigrants to come up. It's hard for people who just come out of the, you know, from another country without an education or without a formal education from America, which has been deemed the only, you know, only education available, to come up and to be able to support themselves financially. And especially being bombarded with the materialistic views of America as a young man, young person, young adult growing up in this world, you're going to want those things. You're going to need economic stability. And gang life provided that for a sense, but it also provided a family for people. Especially with their parents having to work two or three jobs, working day shifts and night shifts, and having nobody at home, you got nobody but your homies, you got nobody but your friends, and that's what the gang life activity really provided for people. It provided stability as far as relationships within your personal activities, economic status, as far as, you know, being able to buy your clothes, being able to buy food for your family, but being able to go out and have fun. You know, all these things were supported by it because of the oppressive nature of our economy here and our society, especially towards immigrants.
Okay, I'd like to read a couple of pieces. See if you guys have any thoughts or response, or if not. And by the way, you're listening to killradio.org. Our phone number here is 213-252-0998. We are also on Instant Messenger, AIM, as Kill Radio Station. Okay. The title of this story is ABC, Filipino Spy Works in White House. A Philippine-born former U.S. Marine is reported to have engaged in espionage at the White House over several years and used his position to steal documents from the office of Vice President Dick Cheney. ABC News, in an investigative report Wednesday, said 46-year-old Leandro... do you know how to say that?
Argoncio.
Worked for nearly 3 years before leaving to work for the FBI. He was arrested last month and accused of downloading classified documents from FBI computers. The report cites investigators saying Mr. Argoncio stole files on the president of the Philippines and passed the information on to opposition politicians. Asked about the report, a White House spokesman said it is an ongoing investigation, blah, blah, blah. Do you guys have any thoughts about this story?
Well, what's interesting is that there's a current political crisis, economic crisis in the Philippines, with the current president, Gloria Macapagal Arroyo, being found out that she's the illegitimate president. With tapes of her talking to the Commission on Elections official regarding how many votes would she win by, how many votes would they pad on. So there's been a growing mass movement in the streets, and also with the parliamentary procedures, where people are starting to question her legitimacy to run a government. And in turn, what had happened was this Argoncio is an FBI CIA operative, and what we find is that pretty much anything that the Philippines does must get the okay by the United States, particularly with policy, with trade. The Philippines the Philippines is a semi-feudal, semi-colonial state of the United States. Without the U.S. go ahead, then many times the politicians won't move, but anytime they snap their fingers, they're ready to jump. Now, what had happened was the opposition, or parts of the opposition, particularly Senator Lacson, who was a general of the Philippines, gross human rights violator, has been vying for the presidency also. And this was one of his informants, who was arrested several times in the United States, several times in the Philippines, but was always released.
This particular Marine? Yeah,
was part, and for similar acts. But because of his, I guess, his contributions for the United States, they're always able to look the other way. Now, what is happening is that he was passing on information to Lacson, who in turn was trying to figure out if the U.S. wouldn't mind if he and his his forces would possibly do a coup d'etat in the Philippines, military coup d'etat. So very much he was trying to test the waters, because every president that has been in the the government republic of the Philippines has had the go signal of the United States. Even former dictator Ferdinand Marcos, he was a puppet of the United States. That's why we always say U.S. Marcos regime. Cory Aquino, U.S. regime. Fidel Ramos, U.S. regime. Gloria Macapagal, U.S. regime. They go hand in hand. So if, you know, they were basically farming out and testing the waters, if the United States didn't have a problem with it, then that might have been something they went for. Also, another analysis is that because of the growing stability in the Philippines, they wanted to use this possibly as a pretext to say, look, the Philippines is crazy. This is exactly why the president of the Philippines needs to call martial law. She's invoked many laws that, when you combine them together, are very much a martial law state. Mm-hmm. So this is also many people's analysis, particularly the progressive community, the progressive movement, is looking at and saying, well, if this is getting a lot of airplay and this is something that GMA, the president, can use and say, look, it's so unstable. We need your help. I need to pass these laws so we can really crack down on the opposition. Because the opposition is far and wide. You have people on the extreme right, people on the left, people in the middle, who all are against Gloria Macapagal-Arroyo. But if she can use this as a blanket statement to say this is what the opposition is going to do, then she very much can declare martial law in the Philippines.
Okay. Some complicated politics there. But it sounds like it's, from the way you described it, correct me if I'm wrong, one corrupt group competing with another corrupt group for power.
The ruling elite. When we talk about it, the ruling elite, they continue to struggle and do counter moves on each other, at the expense of the toiling masses, the majority of the people. You have the progressive opposition, made up of the mass movement, made up of the political parties in the government, particularly Bayan Muna, Anak Pawis, Gabriela Women's Party, Suwara Bangsamoro, Anak ng Bayan, these progressive party lists who are trying to advocate and utilize the masses to play a part in this parliamentary struggle. But at the same time, the mass movements, the mass organizations, people's organizations are taken to the streets because it has to. We have to use these forms to continue to raise awareness and draw the masses together, like what had happened with People's Power 1 and 2 to oust Ferdinand Marcos and oust Joseph Estrada.
Okay. We will leave it to our listeners to research and educate themselves further. Hope we are setting off in the right direction. Next thing we're going to do here on Kill Radio is we're going to interview Jason's mom, Jocelyn, who is a prominent member of the Filipino community here, and her mother was a very well-known and active member of the community as well, a community activist. And we're gonna try to give Jocelyn a call and see if we can get see if we're able to patch in the phone call over the air and talk a little bit about Jason's grandmother. In the meantime, we're going to listen to a little bit more Filipino music. Stay tuned, Kill Radio listeners. We're experiencing a momentary technical delay. We will be continuing shortly. We have awaiting us on the phone Jocelyn right now. We're going to hear about her mom. I'm just saying goodbye to our guests. And then we will continue with more Filipino music and discussion. Please stay tuned. Okay, we are experiencing some momentary technical difficulties. Yeah, sure. Go ahead.
Yeah, I'd actually like to take this opportunity to talk about an event we're having. It's going to be on the 21st of this month. And we're doing a sharing of what's really going on in the Philippines, especially in the southern islands of the Mindanao areas, of the southern island of Mindanao, I should say. But if you want to learn about what's going on and really hear some firsthand experiences of some people that went out there this past summer for a solidarity mission to the Mindanao Island, please join us. We're going to be at my mother's shop, Remy's Own Temple. This is going to be the 21st of this month. We're meeting up at 7 o'clock, and we're going to be talking about our people's experience out there. We had three people go out there and really integrate with some folks out there and learn about the situation, and we'd love to share it with you. So please come out to Remy's on Temple on the 21st. Look at propeopleyouth.com to find out more about the actual event, and I hope to see you out there. But thank you for having us today. We had a great time.
All right. Thanks a lot, Jason. Great having you. Thanks for coming. The show is not over. Please stay tuned, listeners.
Hello. Okay. We are live. We're listening. We're speaking right now with Jocelyn. Jocelyn, do you want to tell us your full name?
Okay. It's Jocelyn Giaga Rosenthal.
Okay. Now, maybe you could share with us a little bit of the Filipino history of your name.
Oh, okay. Well, the Giaga is a Filipino name, and it's from Visayas, the southern part of the Philippines. And Rosenthal is not a Filipino name.
Okay.
My name is hyphenated, actually. But interestingly, I found that name when I went to tour two places. That name was I found in the Basque area of Spain, which makes sense, because the Spaniards conquered the Philippines. But also, I found that name in Ireland with the, what you call now, I'm blocking. There's sort of a lot of interference here. But was that old Irish civilization. You hear me?
Yes, I can hear you.
Okay, all right.
Let me ask you to maybe just back up a little bit and mention again to our listeners that you run a community center.
Right. Uh-huh.
That's considered Echo Park.
Yes, but it's now also within Echo Park. It's designated historic Filipino town.
Okay.
And this was designated in the year 2002, following several attempts in the past 20 years of different community groups to designate that area as historic Filipino town. The Filipinos came, it was a landing, it's an enclave, and a landing port, entry port of Filipinos over the years, since the early 1900s. Actually, the original Filipino town was in what is now known as Little Tokyo, the Weller Court area. But with all the redevelopment and the development of businesses from the late 50s to the late 60s, the population was pushed westward on Temple Street and Beverly Boulevard. And so that's where the early Filipino immigrants reestablished their barber shops, the little coffee shops, restaurants. And but over, like I said, over the last 20 years, there was this yearning and attempt by many community leaders to designate that area.
Jocelyn, you grew up in this area.
Right. Well, I mean, my parents actually, we landed in this area, in the same area. And then as many immigrants, we left that area for Larchmont Village. And in the 80s, however, my parents decided to go back to the hood, so to speak. So they sold our house on Lucerne Boulevard and moved back into this area to try and, my mother was very involved also in community services to the seniors. She founded the Filipino-American Service Group and was president of one of the oldest organizations called Filipino Community of Los Angeles, which is located on Temple Street. It's one of the oldest organizations and also most well-known organization. So she and my father began serving the senior citizen community in this area. Although there was a period of time, like I said, where we did not live in the area, we were always involved. I was always very involved in either teaching, running Filipino cultural schools, or serving on many boards of different organizations in the area.
Now, how old were you when your family moved to the Echo Park, back to Echo Park?
Back to the Echo Park area?
Yeah.
In the 80s, probably in my, I was already 35, the late 80s by that time.
But your mom had been active for many years before that,
correct? Oh, yes, right. Although we didn't actually live in the area, like I said, that period of time, she was always involved in with organizations, service organizations in the area.
We were speaking to your son Jason a little while ago, and he talked about being a kid and packing up a car with food for, I'm not sure if it was for homeless people or just people who needed a little extra help.
Uh-huh.
And he described one day they were packing up the car and something spilled all over the car. I was wondering if you were also involved in your mom's community projects when you were growing up.
Oh, absolutely. She was, a real role model and taught us values. When I was growing up, I was a young adult at that time, and I was complaining to her that I was waiting at a bus stop, and I said the senior citizen was taking so long to get to the bus, and she got very, very upset and said that, she really chastised me for that attitude of impatience towards senior citizens. That was my first important lesson. in our youth-oriented society, we were always, and also always in a rush, we get impatient with people who have to go more slowly, like, you know, the handicapped and the seniors. But she was always very devoted to the community and helping out. You know, that was her love. Enjoyed it.
Now, your mom received a special recognition from was it the city?
The county. Well, she received several. She's received many, you know, certificates. But the most recent, the one that preceded her death, was the one she received from the County Board of Supervisors, which recognized many years of contribution to the community. And she was very proud of that. Gloria, Supervisor Gloria Molina, in fact, sponsored that and had a special day. We all went to the Board of Supervisors, to the Hall of Administration, and she was awarded that. So
and
that was very memorable.
When was that?
That was in 1996.
Okay.
And she passed away a few months after that. She had a stroke, and she died in January 9, 1997.
But maybe you could list... for our listeners, I know I saw someplace a list of everything your mom did. Maybe you could just sort of run down the list.
Okay, right. Well, I mean, she was president of many clubs, including the Sampaguita Women's Circle, which started the Filipino Summer School, Cultural School, and it continues to this day. It moved to Carson. She was also president of the Filipino community of Los Angeles, like I said, one of the largest organizations in the historic Filipino town area. She established the senior nutrition program as president at that time. She also founded the Filipino American Service Group, which runs a transitional and emergency housing right now in historic Filipino town and serves about 100 seniors every week. 100 seniors at least gather at that service center a week for education, for nutrition programs, also for the food bank, and sometimes for health screenings. Wow, gosh, it's hard to...
growing up... Mm-hmm. Well, first of all, what was your mom's full name?
Her full name is Remedios, R-E, Emerson Mary, E-D-I-O-S, and it stands for Remedy. She was called Remy for short. And so when I was fortunate enough to acquire a building on Temple Street, I thought it would be so great, and you know, my brothers and my family, my sons, and my husband just really applauded the idea of dedicating it in her memory. So it's called Remy, apostrophe S, on Temple, which means Remy is on Temple.
Mm-hmm.
You know, her spirit remains on Temple.
Remedy is on Temple.
Yeah, Remedy is on Temple. Yeah, so that's her full name. But anyway, what else were you asking me, Johnny?
Any other memories you'd like to share, or actually,